So as I'm sitting here just towards the end of the afternoon, thinking, I just had a sense it would be good to do an exercise, and I didn't really know what to do. I partly was thinking about the cards, because, you know, often we use the cards, and but that didn't work. That just didn't travel. And suddenly my attention kept being drawn by this figure that sits just across from me. And just phenomenologically, what happens is it's just like she came to life. So she wasn't talking to me, but my attention kept being drawn to her. She's a Hopi figure called Yellow Corn Girl. Well, you can't tell what sex she is, of course. I mean, that's one of the interesting things about it. She's completely covered. So she could be a man, could be a woman. I just happen to know she's Yellow Corn Girl because I bought it on the first mesa from a Hopi craftsman who'd made it and said, and I didn't know what it was either. I just liked the form, and he said, "Oh, this is Yellow Corn Girl." So I know a little story behind Yellow Corn Girl, but that isn't really important. As I was sort of sitting with that, that's interesting and kind of, and then I had suddenly had this kind of internal image, then, because they were in my bag, of the two other objects, and then the sense I had then was to give you these in small groups, and you can hang out with them and practice the art of kithing. And as often happens to me, I'm thinking, why am I doing this? Why, you know, perhaps this is what we're doing? What's going on here? Because I don't know. Right? I don't know. I mean, I know that things kind of fit. They come to me, and then they fit. And then I think, okay, we're going to do this. Right? So there's activity of will, if you like, that solidifies, that focuses. Out of uncertainty, something emerges. So I think, right, we're going to do this. So then I do this. We do this. I don't know why we're doing this. But I know we're doing this. And as we're sitting with it, you guys are doing your thing. I'm sitting, watching, kind of thinking, interesting. These objects. What are they? And they're all kinds of things to me. You know, there's all kinds of stories I could tell you about any one of these three objects. But then it dawns on me that, oh right, they're about the heart of what we've been doing this weekend.
What?
They're the heart of what we've been doing this weekend. They summarize the weekend. They summarize in conjunction, not alone. Any one of them could illustrate, but actually it's the three together that for me represent, that create a shape really that holds the work of the weekend. In a way, I can't physically do it really, but if I could, I'd be doing that. Right, so I've got to, so let me just hold it up for you to see. So if I could, and if I could fix it, I would do that, but actually that would be in the center. So this would be in the center.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and it would be in the center, and this, and she'd be standing on the disc, and this would be right in the center. Just look at that configuration for a moment. Okay. So I'm going to explain it in a moment, but the real summary is just this. This is what we've done this weekend. Okay, just this is it. This is the whole thing. Well, you won't get it till I put it together. You don't get it because that understanding comes through me. So you weren't expected to get it, right? No, that wasn't the point. The point of the exercise wasn't to get you to get this. The point of the exercise was just to be with it, Well, it wasn't. This wasn't a trick to try and get you to get it. In fact, we might have done the whole exercise for me to get it. See what I mean? No, it's all right. I'm going to explain it. So I'm going to explain it in a moment. Because what the meaning is. Relational meaning is intrinsic. The objects mean nothing, and they mean everything. They mean everything because they come together in a particular relationship, in a particular moment. I mean, every object, every being is unfathomable. There are hundreds of images, hundreds of thousands probably of meanings that we can draw from these objects, from any object. Meaning is always contingent on relationship and intention. Now, what happens to me, and I want to be as embodied as I can about this, because it's very easy to get conceptual. If I hold this stone, it's a Preseli blue stone, it comes from the Welsh mountains of Preseli. Same stone you get in the same stone you get in Stonehenge, into the blue stones in Stonehenge. The blue stones, not the Sarsens. But it's focused. It represents focus. It represents my experience of holding it. Really, is that it helps me focus. It creates an intention in me, a directionality in me. It's this dense stone, very dense, very hard stone. But when you look into it, it is like the whole universe is in there. So it is that, it's like Marcel was saying, when I look at it, I feel this like stars, star clusters, deep space, you know, sort of, and it's just very earthy, very ordinary kind of stone. So it takes me into this mysterious nature of will and direction. That's both tangible, like I decide to do something. Okay, I'm going to do this, I want to do this, I'm going to do this. Very ordinary, very tangible. And there's another place where will is really mysterious and seems to sort of come out of, I don't know, the deep places of life, the deep places of the universe. It kind of holds both, and it's still a nice bit of stone I can hold, that I enjoy holding. It's tangible. Helps me. Now, this extremely ancient 2,000-year-old bronze mirror. Again, I can tell you lots of stories about it, but its main quality is like this pool of mystery, out of which things arise and fall. You know, it's like this interface, this edge. So you hold it in certain things, you can kind of see very dimly, see reflections. Can't see it very clearly. It also has this feeling of being like a sea, and Marcella's image of lost continents or things emerging out of the sea. It really holds that, it just holds that kind of capacity, that sense of depth underneath. So it, in a sense, there's that kind of conjunction of out of, you know, maybe the will arise, or the deep place deep will arises out of the depth of this. And there's something about how, you know, will can vanish into this and dissolve, can pop up again, or the two can be opposites or complements. This is an impression of moving out, this is a feeling of going in, you know, so the two can operate as kind of opposites for me. But this is like the place, the ground, almost the ground of mystery for me. It represents going into depth, really, something where I could just keep on going and keep on going. And then this third figure, really holds for me this kind of mysterious aspect of the body. Feels very embodied, it's motion, she's walking. So this idea of balance, and she's also holding something, fruits of the earth, the four different colors. It's got this kind of feeling of the directions of the compass and the sort of and there's lots of paradox in this image, really, because it could be a man, could be a woman. happen to know it's a woman, but only because I'm told. If I look at the also she's got the hairstyle a bit like Princess Leia, so that kind of reminds me. But men can also have these things. So there's an ambiguity of sex. There's also a sort of it's not a static image, but it's a very solid, grounded image. It's very grounded. Legs feel very strong, but there's a sort of a movement and a kind of and she's holding these corn cobs that are both somehow, again, have this ambiguity of masculinity and femininity. I mean, they're shaped like phalluses, but they're the fruits of the other fruits of the earth. So there's this sort of ambiguity there. Also, this she's wearing a mask. So there's lots of what is the real shape? You don't know. So there's something about the capacity of the body to transform, to shape itself, to move, to respond to the interplay of these two qualities. So in a certain sense, this sense of dynamic balance and of flow and generative capacity is held for me by these three objects. So, what it means is really, if we're just going to sum up the work of the weekend, probably the work of the whole damn course, we ever think about it, we are finding a way to stand and move within mystery. To stand and move within the ground of mystery. We come from the ground of mystery, right? This sense of beginning place. So the beginning place is like this pool of mystery. So forms arise, forms fall back, the forms coalesce. There's a sort of a bone place, which is a bit like the other thing. This kind of reminds me of the pointing bow. In Australia, the shamans have this thing called the pointing bone. And there's something about the hardness of this and the kind of, let's get to the point. So it is like, let's get to the point. Let's write down what really is here. Find the point. What's the point? So this, the sparseness, the bareness in a sense, the kind of focus of this, the will, it represents the will and the intentionality. But this figure represents the image that takes place around us. The embodied image is literally the body, which reveals and expresses the energy of the image, of the expressive image. Whether that is the new idea, whether it's the sort of the image of a great new way to work with people, the image of a logo, the image of a piece of art, the image of a piece of writing, the image of a new way to cook a meal. All of this arises out of this ground of mystery, out of this mysterious will that then arises, that is the bones of the matter, that then has to express itself in flesh and blood and action. What we have to do, if we're going to do that, is to be able to let go of old forms, old manners of expression. We have to be able to find our ground in the deep place. Have to be able to stand here in this place where many potential forms can arise, like hundreds of potential forms can arise. And we have to, but we have to be stable enough and secure enough to wait for the right one at the right moment. And then we choose. You know, the point of will and directionality is it's an act of creation that kills. Because in the act of choosing, this is the quantum idea of the wave and the particle. The wave becomes the particle. Okay, so the other potential particles die in that moment, and we choose, I am going to do this. So when I looked over at Yellow Corn Girl here and remembered the other two things and said, we are going to do this, I brought something into expression and killed lots of other possibilities. So the act of choice is always an act of, the creative choice is also an act of murder. Okay, so you destroy the other possibilities, you commit yourself to that possibility, to that evolving, developing form, which you then have to live with until it dies. So the consequences of choice, the consequences of embodiment, is you are to a certain extent bound then by the, bound by your choice, bound by your directionality of your will. Now, will is an interesting topic in itself, right? Because actually what we often mean by will is willfulness, is, you know, don't be willful. Where it's a sort of, can arise out of, a relationship to will, first of all, has a lot to do with our conditioned nature. So some of us are allowed to be strong-willed, others of us like to be weak-willed. You know, I'm weak-willed around alcohol, because I choose that I like a drink. Right? You know, sort of, I can choose not to have a drink, but I'd rather choose to have a drink. Right, so it's part of my own conditioned will. There are some things I can refuse very easily, other things I choose not to refuse, and I could say I'm strong-willed and weak-willed. It doesn't really matter. All that stuff is just stuff, right? So whatever your conditioned will is, it's fine, as long as it doesn't create trouble for yourself and other people. But it is all surface will, all that. It's all just the ornamentation of your psyche. It can be a nice ornamentation. Don't be wrong. But if we take will a little deeper, we go beyond, we start to come into presence and sort of beyond the conditioned place. We start to come to this place of feeling centered, where that, to a certain extent, for that to happen, you have to disidentify with many of the kind of conditioned aspects of your will and personality. You have to be able to step back a bit from yourself, create a bit of space so you just don't fill the space with your own repetitive processes. And that's a good thing. You have a sense of center, you can make judgments, there's freedom involved in that. In a way that's kind of, I suppose a conditioned will is really, in a sense, I suppose if you use the tree of life, is in yesod. It's that conjunction of yesod, hod, and netzach, of feeling, that swirl of thought, emotion, and memory. Right, and so there's lots of wills in there competing, and they find a balance really, which is how we come to the balance of the psyche that needs to be disturbed. Because as we disidentify from that and start to touch into the kind of the deeper place, we come into that place called Tiferet, that sense of centered in the heart. The mind starts to open up into the clarity of Gevurah. The emotions start to open into the wider, deeper love of Gedula. And so the whole psyche starts to open up and become responsive to something deeper. Now, that's a kind of intermediate step, really, because actually the deeper place we come to, the place that we've been looking at here, really is the will that arises out of Da'at, which is the mysterious place. Right, so this is the place where you go even beyond the center into surrendering into something deeper than yourself, deeper than your known self. Here we come into the unknown, into the mystery. And here we do things not because, in the intermediate place we can make choices because we feel the clarity, we feel that quality of acceptance and rightness that feels like a good decision. In the deeper place, we do things and we have no idea why we're doing them. They come completely out of the mysterious place. So we don't know whether they're good or not. In the intermediate place, you have a sense whether something feels good or not, feels right or not. In the deeper place, you have no idea. It's just doing itself.
It's like being in your therapist and just
Without knowing why, that's right. And sometimes, you know, some of your choices in therapy, you have a feeling of rightness about it, feeling goodness, which is that and you understand why you're doing it. That's more the intermediate place. But it's that deeper place where you do something. And sometimes, as you know, you can do very powerful things with people. And half your head will be freaking out because you're wondering, what the hell am I doing? And, oh my God, this is going to go wrong. You know, because it's actually coming from something very deep that you don't have any real kind of control over. You're aligned with something that you're giving over control to. And in a certain sense, it's that deep will that then creates the form of meeting. This figure walks towards, right? And there will be many different shapes within this figure. So you have to let both the deep place and the deep will transform your shape, so that you meet the conditions of life in whatever, meet the whatever you're meeting, whether it's a person, whether it's a life condition. Some the times of life you have to be very strong and very direct and very directive. Other times you have to be very soft and very quiet, and all kinds of shades in between. Now the sense of I'm calling kithing, or the kind of way of relating from the deep place, means that you have to allow that surrendered place to shape you, so that you become the image of the deep, meeting whatever you meet and trusting the deeper place underneath you to direct the encounter. Now, this is easy to say and hard to do, okay? Because actually what happens is you fluctuate all the time from very conditioned place to the intermediate place to the very deep place. And depending on where you are internally and externally, you're pulled back and forth between these figures, between these aspects of yourself. Because the work of transformation in this is an alchemical work where you keep on recycling the kind of energies. So that gradually titrating and alchemically transforming the patterns that loop around little by little. Now, the exercises that we've looked at this weekend really are designed to help us with that process, so that the Kabbalistic cross creates a sense of dynamic balance and sort of brings things together. The middle pillar exercises wakes everything up and circulates, titrates the energy alchemically. Coming in straight into the body, into the unconditioned pool, if you like, at the center, allowing a different, a transitional form of yourself, a bigger form of yourself, in a sense, which is powerful, wise, and loving, which can work within all the other images that of yourself that you have to help to enable in the end that image itself needs to vanish, because it becomes, in the end, it, like any image, it becomes an oppressive image, but it's a transitional image because it acts as a focus for the idea, the intention that we are more powerful, wiser, and more loving than we know. So it holds that potential. When that is fully embodied, you don't need the image anymore. But what that image does, the ability of acting, you know, feeling that, if you like, feeling those robes, feeling that capacity which enables you to reach out to the world in different ways, softens your sense of self, expands your sense of self, and opens up new possibilities.
Easier as a therapist than having disagreement with your other half. Excuse me, I must be powerful and wise and loving for a moment.
I really wouldn't. That would so not work. That would so not work, wouldn't it? God, that's a recipe for total relational disaster. So I'm glad that's what you've taken from the weekend, Rob. I'm glad that's what I said. John, you want to say? It's not a mechanism. It's so difficult. It is very difficult what we're talking about. John, you want to say?
I can fully respect the importance of those objects to you and understand what they represent.
Yeah.
And what you said makes total sense. I get it.
Yeah.
But if you were to put the question to me, how would I represent what I've learned this weekend and this course so far,
yeah,
in terms of choosing three objects?
Yeah.
For example, I carry around in my bag or about my person a pebble from a beach, a conch found in the lane,
yeah,
and a twig of a tree.
Yeah.
And to me, those three things represent pretty much what we've been describing.
I'm sure, yeah.
So I can't connect with the objects with a resonance.
No, you don't have
but
to.
But conceptually, I can understand, yeah, what they mean.
Yeah. Right? Sure. No, you don't have to connect. You don't have to have a resonance. That's the point. It isn't about... No, that's right, because actually, if you don't have to do anything other than be yourself, right? So it's a part of me holding these objects, because I'm holding objects you don't resonate with, you understand what I'm saying, and part of the experience is they mean nothing to me. Right? And that's part of it, that's essentially part of it. And then what happens is you then think about three objects that do mean something to you. So that's part of it. Well, the part of the point of the exercise was not to get you to resonate with the objects. That's not the point at all. The point of the exercise is all of what we're doing now, which is partly about summarizing and condensing the meaning of the weekend.
No, I think we had that conversation in our group about whether it was about were we supposed to be able to acquire the ability to resonate with any object.
Yeah, definitely not.
Because for some objects we could be too fast, or we would be.
Yeah.
But we're telling you
that. Yeah, totally.
And is that relationship, I suppose, is.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is relationship. One of the big problems, really, the other reason I chose objects, to be honest, to look at, is there's a whole kind of thing that you get in New Age circles about sensitivity, and it's almost like you get people play psychic games. I could really, so the fantasy would be you pick this up and you tell me the history of the object, right? You tell me the magical history of the object, and I say, wow, isn't that would be great. And that's not it at all. That's really not what we're talking about, because actually everything is relational, right? So it is. So that actually, there would be very little point to you being able to do that, even if you were able to do that. We'd all say, well, that'd be nice. But actually what's more...
Actually, it's a party trick?
That would be a party trick. It would be a party trick. It would be meaningless. What's actually important is the actual relationship that happens or doesn't happen. Right, it's about trusting your own capacity, because otherwise these are not magic objects. They're objects. They're just objects. Mm. Right? What was important in it? And what's important in it is what we're doing with the whole damn thing now. Right. So what was important? As I was sitting there feeling, I don't know, how are we going to do this? And various ways I could have ended this weekend. But then a process happens that involves the objects. Now, the objects are essentially meaningless in themselves, because the underneath intention is that we all, to whatever way and in whatever way we do, we summarize for ourselves our experience of the weekend. But crucial to that is to trust your own process, your own way of working with your own inner and outer senses.
So the object of the exercise was what?
Well, I didn't know what the object of the exercise was, except that it was a step towards the object of the exercise, as I'm understanding it now, which wasn't the object. I didn't have an object for the exercise other than I felt this would be a good thing to do.
Well, the object of the exercise would be different for every single person.
Well, yeah.
Part of it came from us and our understanding of what the exercise was.
The overall, as I sit here now, it feels like the object of the exercise is to help us conclude the weekend and to find, as much as we can, some kind of conclusion, some kind of summary, some kind of relationship to what we've been doing. But that wasn't. But I didn't have that as a concrete. This is. Why we're going to do that at the time. All literally happened is I felt like it wouldn't be right for me just to sit and talk at you for the next hour and a half. We needed to do something. I didn't know what to do. The cards didn't feel it. And then my attention is literally drawn by Yellow Corn Girl and it's like, okay, we'll do something with her. Then I have these two images of the things in my bag. And then I get, okay, we're going to hang out with that. Now, I don't at that point know why we're going to hang out with that, except something kind of clicks into place from a deep place. And I think, okay, we're going to hang out with that then. Good, I don't know why, but let's see what happens. And then it's in the process that I understand something that for me, so because I'm, of course, you know, looking at my own conclusion here as well, that these three objects represent what we've been doing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That they are a remarkably evident picture of what we've been doing as well. When you think of the disc being the core, the shaman,
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I didn't know that until the moment I put it together.
Yeah.
Right. So I didn't even have that idea until, because what literally happened, you know, we felt like, okay, this very bitter, I'm going to need to talk. So I picked the objects up, and I'm handling them in a kind of tactile kind of way, and then they kind of fit together. Right. So it comes out of my body. So then, oh, okay. But then I get, oh, all right, that was interesting. Didn't know that before. Right. So that's what I mean. But that's the, I look at, well, what are we really doing? Getting present, embodying, and then really trying to, moment by moment, trust that mysterious aspect of will. And but we have to let it embody, we have to give over control. Now that's easy to say, because actually I can be kind of horrendously wrong about these things sometimes, where I can be just sort of coming out of a good idea, or kind of, what I know is I have to do, what I have learned, really, and I suppose if I think, well, what am I doing here, what I'm really trying to teach any time really, it's there is this mysterious place right at the heart of ourselves that is terrifying, because there is no knowing within it. And I really mean no knowing within it. Way and to give what I know works is to give myself over to that really fully and let it do its thing. And it's absolutely hair-raising, because I literally don't know what the next thing is going to be, or even if anything next is going to happen. But it's that's the kind of heart of this whole thing. Now that place where you say that's the regenerating energy that comes out of nowhere, and you don't know until you know, and then so literally what happened when I put those things together, suddenly, oh, it might have clicked in a place, and I'm thinking, oh, that's clever. It's not me, I'm not clever, right? But it just felt, okay, that's clever, I really got that really works. God, how did that happen? And that's something, because something deeper than anything to do with my conscious self and conscious personality is somewhere directing this and kind of and working with, you know, what's arising here.
I think it really did, but the thing is, you didn't, maybe we should have thought about ourselves, but we didn't think of looking at them together, we just looked at them individually, and perhaps we should have thought that, it is together that, well, they all make some kind of sense themselves, but it is the relationship between the three of them that is actually, yeah, you know, about what we think. So, and with
Well, I doubt we could have, because I hadn't thought of it. I had no idea that the three fitted together until they fitted together. I was just thinking it was three separate objects, actually. So I didn't actually even have that conception they could fit together until they fitted together.
The inspiring thing for me about this is the minute-by-minute nature of that connection with Deep Mystery.
Yeah, totally.
And I didn't particularly see you go off into a bloody trance for 3/4 of the night. You've got a special
clothes. No, not at all, not at all.
You know, you're just like being Ian, yeah, on a Sunday afternoon.
That's right.
But giving yourself space, presumably while we were doing this, to allow the next thing to generate.
Yes, that's right.
To be the right thing.
That's right, and then to go with that, right? So that's the key thing. Then you just go with it. You know, it's like when I, another example would be when I, you know, so I just finished 17 years of work in Israel. I didn't know I was going to do it until it actually came out of my mouth. And yeah. I said, you know what, guys, I think we're finished. Yeah. And I hadn't planned it, I hadn't thought it through, I hadn't kind of. But once it came through, I knew it was right. It just came out of that same place. Mm. And And over the years, I suppose I've learned to trust this. So when they come, and it's not that I, you know, I still feel brilliant about it. They go, bloody hell, I used to enjoy working there. It's good money as well, you know. So it wasn't. So it isn't. So the rest of me, right? So there's some part of me that's fine, of course, and knows is true. And definitely, I'm not going to teach in Israel again. There's something really remarkable happens. But the rest of me is thinking, oh, bloody hell, how did that happen? I didn't plan that. Like, whoa, what about my money? And, whoa, you know, and sort of, and it's good.
You learn to trust it.
Yeah.
Obviously, over the years of training, you learn to trust it on a moment-by-moment basis.
Yeah.
And this is what we're all...
Yeah, and we're all doing that,
working.
Right?
And I'm not doing it very well. I think this is what we're working to.
We're all trying to. Well, I'm as well. Because I have to work, of course, with these three levels. When I talk about these three levels, are the conditioned will, the centered will, and if you like, the deep will.
Yeah.
All these three levels are working simultaneously. So part of me can kind of, and in fact, what tends to happen is as I relate to the, if you like, the deep will, that as that comes into form, it comes into that more centered sense of will, and I get this sense of clarity and acceptance. So that bit's fine. But then there's this other bit of just the bit of the stuff that is Ian and conditioned Ian that is sometimes mightily pissed off by the decisions of deeper Ian and thinking, I want my money. Hell, it was very handy, that cash. Yeah. And it used to be very nice to be able to tell people I work in Israel and, you know, and sort of, and, you know, so there's a whole... It's complicated. It's simple and it's complicated.
I was talking to a friend of us, and I said to him on text, I said,
yeah.
I was going to say, this is my last retreat. I said, I don't know where it came from.
Same thing. Said, right, exactly that.
It's my last retreat that I've heard.
Yeah.
I still went, and I arrived feeling wrong being there, and actually a lot's coming up, which is, we've worked through this week.
Anyway. Yeah.
There's no way I can get back. It doesn't feel, I haven't decided yet, but it doesn't feel that I can go back.
No, I think that's right, Real. I completely do. I think that's exactly the same thing that I'm saying, right? That's exactly something that comes out of somewhere really deep. And it's slightly shocking when it comes out, because actually that's a very, you know, it's a very absolute statement. In fact, it's been part of your life a long time. Right? In the same way, me working in Israel has been part of my life a long time. So suddenly you think, but once it's out like that, you've got a choice, actually, I think. You can either decide to go with it, or you can bury it. Right? So you do still have choice. Isn't it? You have to. You can decide, no, I could have retracted from that and decided I'll change my mind about it. Maybe I was being too extreme. Let's take a bit more time. Let's do it again next year. So all kinds of things I could have done there. And certainly the fearful part of me, the part of me that is identified with being a teacher in Israel, wanted me to say all kinds of equivocating things. And that was the choice point, you know. But I think there's a danger if you don't go with the thing once it's said, then that energy stays in you. You're conflicted, so you end up then in a constant state of conflict that you have to eventually resolve in some ways.
You don't act on that place.
Yeah.
And it's like you make in that moment you've made a contract with yourself.
Yeah.
And if you don't follow that contract through, then that can set up a feeling of unease.
I think so, and I think and a sort of sense of I just think then a continual conflict, disappointment, having moved away from the integrity. There's a whole number of things, consequences that follow that, I think. And, you know, so it's a serious thing when it happens. But if it comes out of that deep place and you've, in a sense, seen it and gone along with it and then choose to not do it, that's... Because if you imagine, this deep will place is very strong, so it's a very powerful will. So having agreed with it and gone with it and then torn away from it, you're then setting up what is quite a serious conflict in the psyche that is difficult to resolve.
I find very often, you know, if I went with some of those deep feelings, then actually that wouldn't have been right. Because often if I sit with it and then add to it, then something deeper happens.
Yeah, but that...
So my instincts are often like, oh, I'm just going to walk out or sod that, or I'm going to, you know. And if I don't do that, if I just stay with it and then I come to the next layer, and I notice there's probably three or four layers I'm going through.
I think there's different layers. I'm not saying go with your first instinct like that, right? Can actually, the, you know, there's a whole, what, I suppose what I'm, the, the if I think, you know, if I just describe Margaret, I suppose the process in Jerusalem, I there were various times in that week when I could have walked out, right? And I didn't act and I didn't mention that at all. I stayed with it and stayed with it. And in some ways you have to take the charge, that sort of charge has to go. It's not a charged place, I think, the place I'm talking about when it happens. In fact, you can, one of the things you can distinguish it by is by an absence of charge. It, there's just a feeling of stillness and rightness and clarity.
Yeah. Right, it's because it is so clear.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I know that I'm really.
Yeah, there's a sort of simplicity about it. I think there's kind of simplicity about it. But I think there's normally for me there's an absence of emotional charge. Because certainly if I think about that group who did play me absolutely rotten that week, I could have walked out angrily and sort of, fuck you, have you never bloody listened to me, I'm out of here. And I had to take all that charge away, I had to stop, not act on that, I had to hold that until then. And then what happened when it came out, it was simple, it was very clear. I wasn't charged, there wasn't a charge for them people to react against as well, really. So it was much more powerful, I think. It was just, so it just landed very simply, very, okay, here we are, we're at the end, guys.
So you went through the reactive world, the blah, blah, blah world.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's what I had to do. And I think that's often what we do have to do, because normally, whenever there's charge, it's mostly that kind of reactive stuff in us going on. And so we have to listen, if in a sense you have to step away from that, and you have to listen to what's deeper and deeper. And almost redefine, well, as you say, go through different layers until something seems to come out of nowhere, actually, and then it's simple, it's clear, but it's very definite when it happens normally.
So I'm feeling quite good right now, really, a lot of affection, love for the place.
Yeah.
Dynamic, where you're always a beginner, such a beginner, you're not met
at
your level. So that's where it becomes, and I'm not feeling angry with anybody, I'm feeling quite, just going back in there isn't.
No, I think that's right, and I think that for my money, that's what you can rely on when you have that feeling. I remember when I left the Karuna Institute, I mean, having God knows, my relationship was more incredibly stormy and angry, but I didn't leave in anger. There was a sort of moment where I'd written a letter and got a particular response, and I wasn't in that moment angry, I just knew it was over. So there was, again, it was that sense of simplicity. I knew that, okay, that's it. And lots of me didn't want to know that. But in that moment, there was a sort of stillness, a sort of, okay, this is over. Okay, I'm done now. And it isn't that I could later got very stirred up and all kinds of things, but raving at times, actually, it's sort of, it's a man, some people will have seen this, have seen some of that. But in the heart of it, though, and why I never changed my mind, was the stillness. So it's that stillness, in a sense, and it's the same thing I feel around my work in Israel. That I just feel, okay, you know, it's not even, you know, part of me would like to go back there, and particularly if they offer me more money. But I can't. The reason I can't is because it's done. Right? And it's just a feeling of, that's over, there's nothing to do there. It's done. May not have finished in a very elegant way, but it is done. And I think that's the key here somewhere, at the heart of all these different exercises. It's about really listening and trusting our embodied experience but being able to kind of, in a sense, disidentify and then be in the unknown and then embody the unknown. Right, so it's not just disidentify, because then you become the vehicle, the creative vessel of the deep energy that's arising, which will then run its course, and eventually that'll die as well, and then you have to kind of, you know, disidentify again.
The decision was made,
yeah,
as if they've stepped
back from it or something.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake, because actually that's the moment where you embody that. It's not made for, I think that's a splitting when people do that, right? Yeah. So when they do that, that's a kind of splitting and a not quite embodying the energy. Because actually
that's,
I think it's, yeah.
But actually it has been made by the deep will.
Yes, it has.
Yes, it has.
But when you speak it in that way, yeah, it's like you're splitting from the deep will and slightly kind of, you know, separating yourself.
Not quite owned, and not quite embodying it.
Whereas it, yeah, because it's that sense of simplicity, and it's, you know, no one other than me ended my work in Israel. You know, it's okay from a deep place in me, but it wasn't like something externally decided that we went through a process. I listened. I took charge out of things. I listened. And then something deeper in me took control. Now, I could easily think of that as something separate from me. You know, and I think sometimes people would say, well, God spoke, but for me, it did. Yeah. Yes.
I'm worrying over this.
Like, go on. Go on, yeah.
You set this exercise.
Yes.
Without any real clear sense of where it was leading, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
So our role was to clarify for you what you're going to teach us.
Partly, yes. I mean, that's not the whole of it, but partly, yes. That's partly that exercise was a vehicle.
So without us participating in that.
Yeah, I couldn't have known it.
Yeah.
Totally. No, totally. Right, that's the whole point. For me, I needed your participation, your working with the objects, and because it was in the process of you working with the objects that I understood the meaning of the objects. Yeah, certainly. And then, that's right, absolutely. So then as we come back, you feed back to me, I pick up the objects, then it comes together, tangibly comes together. So that's, in a way, is that deeper, if you like. And in a way, that's one of the interesting things. I brought this up right at the end, really, because this is a way that, because that deeper will, my role here is not just about me being on my own. I'm here as the facilitator of the group. And so as that place, it's a co-creation between all of us. And it always is, actually, but this is a very, in a sense, this is a very kind of elegant and clear example of it, in that I have the suggestion, I need you to do the exercises, don't know why we're doing it, but it comes together in the end by us all cooperating with each other together, and us all cooperating with the deeper, all of it. Totally, we're all in the mystery, creating something together, if you like, that sort of, you know, and it depends upon everybody being authentic to their own relationship or lack of relationship with the thing. But now, if everybody had said, well, these are in totally magical, you know, say everybody said these totally magical objects, these are, you know, and this means this and this means this, that deeper understanding wouldn't have happened, because it's not about the objects. You know, it's about what we're doing together, making use of whatever materials are available to us. Yeah.
In this group, then
yeah,
has to be
much more.
So that dynamic has been set into action.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And inevitably, you know, as John was saying, it's a process we're being in together. This is a deepening. We're getting to know each other. It's inevitably complicated bringing two different groups together. So we're getting to relax with each other, and deeper possibilities are starting to emerge. So, there we are. Any last comments or things anyone wants to say? Before we just sit together and be quiet for a moment. I think so. The new moon's a nice time. I like the time of the new moon. I always love the sliver of the crescent moon on the new moon. It's so beautiful. And this is, of course, the beginning of a new sun. We're in spring, and we're in the beginning of a new moon cycle. You know, so that's kind of something quite nice about that, really.
It's so fragile. It feels like a real gift.
Yeah, it is. Just the beginning of something. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, we're just going to sit for a moment. I think Rob's in there. Let's just sit together. Rob and Pauline can come and join us. Let's just be quiet. And just not much longer, really, but just a couple of minutes of sitting and just to take a breath together. So we're just going to sit together to close, Pauline. Okay, just sit. No, Rob is just I'll leave the door. Rob will come in just a sec. So that's so just come and sit with us. We'll just breathe together. So just sitting together, remembering balance, flow, and the forms that arise out of the mysterious deep will. The practice of kaizen, which is the befriending of ourselves and the universe. Soon. Good journey home. Enjoy the light, bright evenings now. So that's the good, that's the upside of the losing the hour's sleep. Just look how bright it is. Isn't that lovely? Oh, nearly forgot. Handouts, John. Proper handout, proper workshop. Handouts summarizes all the exercises. When do we free meet again? May.
May. Is it?
It's in May. Yeah, it's for 2 months.
Oh, thank you.
She hasn't yet, actually, no, so I'll email you about it. I'll email us all about it.
Fantastic.
So the handout contains the exercises, okay, so that you don't have to remember. There you go.
Thank you.
There you go. 27th to 28th of May right. is when we next re-emerge. Yeah.
But we haven't got the Hebrew letters for the things that you can't do them. You can't send an email
to
unless you've got
Hebrew letters for what?
For the
Kabbalistic cross. I can do that. I can do it on a Word document. Do you want the Hebrew letters? Okay, I'll send it to you. Yeah.
I don't think she'll do many more. She won't do one. I have. Wonderful writer.
Ah, right, because we just got Rivers of London.
Brilliant.
And I'm letting Arthur read it first. Because I'm really stuck on that Melissa Denning thing. It's really good.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a really good book.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. He's a really good writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I let him know that there was actually a series.
There's a whole series, actually. Yeah. That's right. So Arthur's in for good. In for reading first if he likes it, because it's good.
And we're going out for din-dins, not this Wednesday, but the following Wednesday.
Oh, that'd be nice. That's a nice idea. That'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Yeah. That'll be fun. Take care, Regan. Yeah. That'd be nice. Good.
I'll see you soon.
Mm.
Yes.
Because you two are off. I haven't got to rush home from work. We can go further afield if you want a special place. If you want to. Or
come on, yeah.
Or it's special it's that night at the riverside.
Yeah.
If we
Yeah, no, I don't mind.
You two have a thing.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun, whatever. Yeah, it'll be nice. Yeah, it'll be good.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Okay, my lovely.
Nice to see you
and
again.
You take care of that. You will do.
Hey, have a nice break.
We're going to have a nice break. We are.
Look at you.
Steady.
Steady.
Bye, Roberta.
Bye.
Bye, my lovely. You take care of that.
Thank you.
Good.
Right. It's time to make a word of a kitten staycation.
It is a kitten staycation, you're right, actually, that's what it exactly is. Yeah. Kitten staycation, I like that.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, my lovely. You will.
You will
see me then, my lovely.
Have a nice haul.
Will do. Yeah.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, my lovely. You look after yourself. Okay. Sarah, love me.
I bet the mice will have an egg when we come back.
The mice will be gone.
I'm afraid the mouse is going to become a country mouse, I do fear.
No,
definitely. I'm going to take some of it. Yeah, good. They don't all fit. Yeah, there's just tea in there.
Bye, Marcella.
Bye.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.